Spoiler and fans, it's time once again for Spoiler and Time. This is the Cord Killers sister show. On Cord Killers, we tell you the things you need to know to watch things. And this is the show where, after we've watched them, we talk about them, which is why we spoil them. And on today's episode, we are going to talk about the fourth episode of season one of Deadwood. We're going to talk about the movie The Shape of Water. But first, let me introduce myself. My name is Tom Merritt. Joining me is my co-host, Brian Brushwood.
No, and not only that, but we have live in studio from CosmicRadio.tv, Vincent404, a.k.a. Roberto Villegas. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So shall we, gentlemen, take a peek into the winter movie draft?
Oh, yes, we shall.
Dateline 2018, Tom, major upsets in the entire annals of Cord Killers movie draft winter shenanigans. This is a journey that will go down in history, defying all odds. Team Frog Pants is in third place with
Not
Star
second
Wars.
Second place, Brian. Third place.
And blowing away. Like, Frog Pants essentially has no chance to win because there's no way that Star Wars The Last Jedi is going to make another $300 million, which is what it would have to do, maybe $250 million, in order to... It would be $300 million. To catch up with Team Jury, who's crushing it with $640 million with with Jumanji tearing it up.
Oh, yeah. Jumanji. After I saw that movie, I should have known it was going to do that because it is the movie of low expectations, high enjoyment versus Star Wars The Last Jedi, the movie of ridiculous expectations and so must be perfect. And I certainly did not expect Last Jedi to have such a precipitous fall off in its second week. Team Jury running away with it at $640 million. Team Cord Killers respectively behind him at $549, and Frog Pants isn't even close to them. Almost $100 million behind them. I have to say, the only thing that really Frog Pants can crow about is that they're ahead of us.
Yeah, well, and not that far ahead of us. There's actually Pitch Perfect pulls in another $4 million, although it won't.
Pitch Perfect was a disappointment. I think we would have been in contention for second if it had done better, but I don't think anybody could have touched Jury.
Yeah, but even then, Pitch Perfect 3, $86 million. Not bad for a junior year effort.
What was the budget on that?
Don't care. You mean what did we spend for it in the game?
Well, I mean, because it's funny my viewpoint as the guy that does the minutes and kind of knows sort of how the game sort of works and kind of figured out, like, because I was pretty certain that Last Jedi wasn't going to pull. It was going to pull a lot of money in. It's interesting it didn't pull a whole lot of money in domestically, and it's really not doing pulled a lot of money domestically, but not as much as probably people thought it was going to pull domestically.
I mean, domestic total is $572 million on The Last Jedi right now. How does that compare to The Force Awakens, which was the thing that we were using it as a comp for?
I'd almost want to say that was a lot more.
Keep talking until I can find that answer.
Almost want to say.
Well, regardless, if there's one thing that I love about this game is how continuously surprised all of us keep being.
A 936 domestic total for
Wow. You're right. That is a fairly substantial difference.
Yeah, Force Awakens made just a ton of money on the fact that, oh my God, Star Wars is back. And then comes Last Jedi, where it's much like Tom was saying, it had to perfect movie.
Give it 5 years, and everybody who hates it right now is their favorite.
We'll be able to judge the entire trilogy when it's done, and have a take on that. It doesn't matter right now, but it's very interesting how drastic of a drop that was.
Yeah, man, it was astonishing, and Team Jury well deserved. Jumanji, he picked up for, I want to say he got it for a song. He got Jumanji for. No, $31. He bet heavy on Jumanji.
Well, it's still number six buy in the draft.
That still had enough star power. I mean, The Rock.
That's the reason that that bold spending that much on that I don't think any of us expected it to do quite that well.
Well, because it's a like a, I'm guessing what a PG movie maybe. I'm just I've yet to know the rating. I'm just taking a gamble at that because usually
PG-13. That's
13. Okay, well close enough. Because usually that's the factor of like whether or not a movie. Again, I'm surprised Star Wars has only made as much as it did. And I was reading an article recently that it didn't make a whole lot much in China either. And I'm very intrigued that like wow that's that. That is surprising.
Yeah, something tells me that they're not crying rivers into the golden goblets of cash.
No. Team Jury ended up picking up a very strong slate. They got the number two buy in the draft with, I want to say that was Coco. No, they bought number four, which was Coco. They got number six, which was Jumanji. What was the other one? They got number two. No, they did get number two with Happy Death Day. Like that's how you get this game is spending the right amount of money on the right.
Well, and again, you buy a lot. Oh, Tom Merritt, so British and female. and recorded. Yeah, well, congratulations, well deserved congratulations go to Team Jury, and I think we're. Technically, the game is supposed to end, I want to say, on the 25th. 22nd of this month?
Yep.
Okay, somebody was saying...
Molly's game got pushed back, and then we said, no, they don't need another week for Star Wars to win.
Oh, that's right, because we were so convinced.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Oh, Tom Merritt's back for one last movie draft comment.
Right.
Say again?
I said they were right.
Oh, and they were right, yes.
they did not need that extra week. In fact, they don't even need the 2 weeks they have left. No. It looks like they're fine. All right, shall we move on to talk about The Shape of Water?
Yeah, man. I'm going to let you go first, because I know some of the stuff that you said, oh, there's fireworks behind you. We spent a lot of money on this episode. Your Patreon dollars hard at work.
Wow. That's a great visual bit.
Unfortunately, we couldn't get the permits to get it, you know, right behind Tom. We had to go way off site. It's very expensive.
We're required to pull that curtain halfway over them, or I have to pay an extra licensing fee.
It's our contractual obligations.
So I know, Tom, that you said The Shape of Water was really a movie that stuck with you. Strangely, on the flip side, I adored this movie because its scope was so small. It is a small, fairly short movie, right? It's barely over an hour and a half long or something.
Yeah, it's not ridiculously long. And it is really one perspective for the most part. You know, the other perspective characters come in through her perspective and she can't talk. And I think that's one of those limitations that makes it you have to be more creative to tell the story and makes it more powerful.
It's charming and sweet and simple and short, and I will say that it sticks with you. It's you know, it's got elements. It's the reverse of Splash, right? Like if you're okay with Tom Hanks having sex with Daryl Hannah, then you got to be okay.
I mean, yeah, it's the Dark Universe Splash. Yeah.
I think I talked a bit about this, but I was reading like Wired did a feature article and they are talking about the creature design and they did some really cool stuff. Like they gave him a classic Greek chin to imply humanity, but then they also added stuff to make him more fish-like because, you know, he definitely bites off a dude's fingers.
Yeah.
They also, they shaped the face to look scowly, but then they painted lines that look sad. So depending on how the lights hit it, you got different looks to the creature. That chick definitely boned that fish.
Yeah,
that was I kind of love that they didn't.
And Brian doesn't mean, you know, for flaying.
She didn't debone him.
she straight on boned him.
But I love the fact that they didn't shy away from that. That they're all like, yeah, this is what it means to be in love.
That was a surprising thing. Was they never shied away from a lot of that, especially, you know. Speaking of the time period that it was set in, you know, I think it was like late 50s, maybe early 60s.
Height of the Cold War,
right?
Is around that time.
They didn't shy away from. I was actually surprised. I was like, oh, because I always heard, like, you know, I think in the rating it's like it's an R because of, you know, graphic nudity. Like, okay, well, what is that? Oh, okay, so that's what that means.
Well, and I liked the fact that our protagonist has such a low level job that it massages my perspective. I understand why there's so much of the world that we don't see. You know, it's like we're watching the camera zoomed in way too close to where it's like, I know this is a gigantic sprawling facility,
right?
That lots of dark operations are happening, but they don't take us on a ridiculous tour of.
But you don't.
You, know,
you don't need that for a story. You don't. You can just imply that, and that's good enough.
And because this is a fairy tale.
Ideal.
I mean, this is a very simple, adorable, bizarre fairy tale that I liked quite a bit.
My last thing. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and one of the things that I adored about it too is that, as much as I love an origin story, you know, and part of me is sort of curious, like, what is this world that they can find something like this and have a whole facility set up for finding things like him? But I don't care because the way you introduce me to the story, it's like she doesn't care. She doesn't want to know the whole backstory either. She just sees a creature in pain and wants to help it. And then in the course of helping it and coming to understand it, falls in love. They don't totally whitewash it. There are people who are like, ew, really? Okay. I don't know if I'm okay with this, but there's not the stereotypical like overreaction that turns it into farce. Like it just is, I don't want to say realistic because it's not, but it is, there's a realistic element of it in the level of people's reactions.
So I think what you're really cool. talking about is the difference between realistic versus believable, right?
Yeah.
It's not realistic, but it is believable. Like you go along for the ride.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, that actor who played General Zod, like every time I've ever seen him, when he's not General Zod, he's playing some version of Rex Banner from the Beer Baron episode of The Simpsons.
Yes.
He's always the man trying to, you know, unfairly take down countercultural elements.
I loved as things were ramping up and as like there's like the line, I think it's near the end. I won't ever spoil it, but when he's there with the other general,
I mean, it's called spoiler in time.
That's fair, but the line is more mature to say per se. And I know you try to keep this a little bit family friendly, but it's like what the general says to, at the last moments before he has to, you know, start, you know, actually do all the last actions he has. And he starts talking about like excuses and sort of, I forgot what the exact line was, but it's the last scene. And I love at that moment, like the main sort of villain just starts to just lose everything. And then eventually, you know, finds a spy and shoots him and then kind of.
Oh, sure.
Gets back
he's out of options. He's got nothing to lose. Yeah. And I also like the metaphor of the decay of his fingers, you know, showing his increase. Loss of control of the situation and everything. I'll tell you what, man, that actress is phenomenal. She's fantastic. Yeah. I assume that she learned all of the American Sign Language for the role, but all of it is executed with such precision and grace that it was just lovely.
I never thought I'd have a moment in a movie where a sign language monologue would be like the most impactful scene.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I loved her, I guess, roommate, her housemate across the way.
Yeah. Right.
That was all delightful. It's a great fairy tale. And even the ending, I was so bought in. Like, the ending makes no sense. It's ridiculous. I just assume that she falls down and hallucinates having gills as she dies underwater. But in the context of the fairy tale, like, sure, you magically have gills. Why not?
I just want to make one last thing. I hope there's an alternate universe where Guillermo's directing a BioShock film.
I don't. I don't. That would I be. Just, that would be
only because
nobody would be happy with either of that.
And I'd be happy with that visually. This is like it felt like visually at least like what I would want to.
Well, sure, it's reminiscent, but that's man.
I mean, I enjoyed the film. Like, it's more of me. Like,
do you know what the number one? I can't remember if it's the highest rated or the highest. I think the highest rated video game movie of all time is Tomb Raider. And then number two is, or maybe the highest grossing one, but then the highest rated one, I think at 60% is, Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within. It's just like, stop trying to make movies out of video games.
Oh no. I mean, it's more of it's, yeah, I'll say later.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. They're both got a very, good use of blue.
That's right. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's, move on to Deadwood episode 4. And of course this is the episode where we lose the person that you're sort of led to think is one of the main characters.
Yeah.
But no, you saw this was coming as soon as Jack McCall showed up. But
well,
there you go.
And the funny part is, it's been long enough. I had totally forgotten, and I got suckered again for a second time. They do a good enough job of showing Wild Bill Hickok getting his act together, acting honorably, and all of a sudden you see a role for him as the guy that figures out and solves this mystery about the claim, and you think to yourself, "Holy crap! They backdoored in a secret hero. How great!" And just as you're thinking, this is actually about Wild Bill. No, it's not.
Not anymore. It's not. And our sort of shrinking Violet, who you thought like, oh, so she's just the foil that shows why our dude is kind of maybe as weak as he is, or she drags him down. No, she's now a central motivator.
Oh, you're talking
she's
about our opium addicted soon to be senator in the future.
Laudanum.
Okay. Yeah. Man, it's electric, and I'm telling you, Tom, it's very difficult to do this week after week. Every time I finish one, all I want to do is hit play on the next.
Well, thankfully, we don't have such a big break between them like we did this last time, so we can go right into five next week. But yeah, I mean, you kind of forget all of the things that happened in this episode involving Wild Bill and his talk to Montana. His going to the new place and playing some poker there, and them's like, maybe we could swing him to come to the new place. It just all evaporates, right? And not that all of it isn't important. Montana certainly is set up to go head to head with Swear Engine now because he liked Wild Bill Hickok, and he is not going to be happy with the events as they are. If you know anything about history, and I think they play it pretty close to history. What happens with Jack McCall is not going to be clean cut. It looks like it's going to be at the end of this, but it may not be. We're suddenly headed into an entirely different trail than we were before.
Yeah. And I forgot that we are setting up the beginning of the argument for law and order in Deadwood.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, Montana is thinking, you know, they're betting that law and order will come, and they're like, we're going to get there early when it's still wild. We're going to establish a foothold. So then when law comes and this is a respectable town, I'll be able to bring my family out there, which is a smart play. It's a bold play. And that's how fortunes are made. But man,
Swear,
messy.
Swear Engine doesn't want the Pinkertons.
Yep.
He really doesn't want other kinds of law either.
Yeah, it's I do like the fact that they sort of break his constant paranoia. So we're left with Swearengine not really sure why he doesn't trust Montana, but he just doesn't. And he doesn't know who's trying to screw him, but he's convinced that somebody is, you know. Everything is just electric. And the sycophant to Swearengine, the guy who tried to double cross him and then is now double
Sebastian.
He is. He is the secret star of the show to me. Like, his anxiety and his caught in the middle and his cowardice mixed with his greed. He's the Daffy Duck of this whole thing. I've always thought Daffy Duck was the more industrious, interesting character compared to the Bugs Bunny. Swearengine is just Bugs Bunny. Everything he does is awesome, and he always comes out on top. Whereas he's more the Daffy Duck here.
Yeah, when he saves him money and Swearengine told him specifically not to, you're like, well, Swearengine's going to kill him. He's going to feed him to the pigs. And somehow he's able to convince him, like, yeah, but it's going to work out. And I saved you money. I deserve a bonus, right?
I really felt like that scene was not as resolved as it was played. I felt like quietly in his heart, he was signing. Swearengine was just, you know, writing, putting the ink on there.
Yeah, we'll put it for his death warrant,
you know. But regardless, man, it was great.
Yeah, absolutely. We will keep watching with episode 5 next week. Thank you, Roberto Villegas, for joining us.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me again.
I hope we didn't spoil Deadwood too much for you.
It's okay. I still need to watch Deadwood, but I mean, I'm of the mind now when it comes to spoilers that. It's not going to change my outcome of what I think of a film or a TV show or a book or otherwise. It sometimes is like, oh, okay, that's the bump, that the beat they're going to use. That's the twist they're going to have. Like, I remember I got spoiled The Force Awakens, big beat of that movie. And I was like, oh, okay. And it didn't change what I thought of the movie at all or anything like that. So no big deal to me.
If people want to find out where you are, what you got going on, where should they go?
Oh, it's easy to find me on the Twitters at Vincent404. And, of course, head over to my website, Cosmic Radio TV, to check out my podcasts and such and all the things I do.
Excellent. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening and supporting us at patreon.com/cordkillers. We will spoil you next time.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.